Good afternoon, everyone. It's Adam from Uberfold 24 here today. I've got a very special episode lined up for you of our podcast today. I'm very fortunate. It's a great honour to have Marco Sansoni with me today. Marco, how are you, first of all?
Good afternoon, Adam. Thank you. I'm very good. And thanks for inviting me to your very popular podcast, man.
Thank you. Thank you. It's, very privileged to have you here today. For people who are listening, maybe some of you do know Marco, and I imagine a number of you won't have heard of Marco, but Marco does very important work behind the scenes within world football. Marco works at FIFA. He is the Spectator Services Manager there. Marco, how long have you been working for FIFA? Just before we get started.
In March, it will be 2 years.
Oh, well, we'll look forward to celebrating that 2 year anniversary at the institution. It's to say, real big thank you for joining us today. Now, Marco, just so people can get an understanding, it's not very often we get to talk to people who work at FIFA. What was your journey? How did you get started within sports and spectator services? Customer experience on the whole field, and what was your journey to getting the opportunity to work at FIFA?
It was approximately a 15 years journey, and it was totally unplanned. Let's say it is definitely my entire career in sports, in sports management. It's been way beyond my dreams. I never even dreamt about working in sports. I never even dreamt, because it's beyond my dreams, to work in FIFA and to the so-called governing body of football, which is obviously one of the sports I'm very passionate about. And how did I get here? Definitely... Not jumping on a train on a clear path. I've been graduating. I've studied at university to become a diplomat, so political science, international studies. But then I had my own crisis after university, and I wanted to do something more practical, let's say. And I had a master's degree in quality management. So I ended up having my first real, let's say, job, working in a productive plant of airbags, seatbelts, and inflators. Basically, after 2 years, I realized that was not my path. I was young and I was called engineer without being an engineer. So I said, okay, let me get closer to my dreams. And my dream at that time was for my retirement to have an agriturismo in Tuscany, maybe. That sounds good. It's a kind of one of the few raw materials we have in Italy, is tourism and the landscape. So that's a magical place which I love, and that's what I thought. So I went to London, had a master's degree in hotel management, and during my internship in London, I got injured, and I went back to Italy for a weekend to have a check at the doctor. I quickly went to Torino, visiting some friends, and I got an interview one evening in a pub. And 2 weeks later, I was leaving London to Torino to work at the Winter Olympics in the organizing committee. And that's where my career started. And since then, it was love at first sight. And we're going to talk a lot about love in this podcast, Adam, believe me. And this is where everything started.
That's fantastic. When was that? That was what, 2006?
Exactly 15 years ago, in a few days, when the Olympics started. But I got hired a few months earlier, so it was 2005, last semester of 2005. And as I said, love at first sight, I couldn't leave this career. I just wanted to continue somehow. And that's when I got involved immediately since the beginning with spectators, basically, and with the fans. I was responsible of one venue, the experience in one venue, the bobsleigh venue on the mountains, and that totally reflected my personality. Having had different experiences, when I found the one that totally fit like a dress made by a tailor on you, well, that was my motivation. And then I basically traveled the world from global event to global event, and now I have 4 Olympic Games on my shoulders, Pan American Games, Asian Games, a few others, and now 4 World Cups. Because before working for FIFA, I've been working for the local organizing committee. That was my first World Cup in Brazil, 2 years ahead of the World Cup. So Confederations Cup doesn't exist anymore, and World Cup. And then again, in Russia, I got involved, first consulting the organizing committee, and then in an agency, part of the CSM group, which basically focuses on the experience of the hospitality guests. So it's the account management of all hospitality programs of the company, plus another project which was very specific, of bus provision. That's the only project I took care of that didn't have to do with spectators. Mm-hmm. So basically, in a nutshell, that was my career. And FIFA, having developed the spectator service department for the first time in FIFA World Cup history in Brazil, for the local organizing committee, that became a requirement for future organizing committees. And then FIFA asked me to develop these from the inside and define the requirements, the strategy for the tier one, that's how we call them, tier one tournaments, which are senior tournaments, men, women, and club World Cup. This is how I got here and what basically I'm doing.
Hey, it's a great journey. And I mean, you must have a lot of fun. I've got to say, you must have a lot of fun each day at work doing that. Just before we, you know, dive in a little bit more with it, I've got to ask you, over those 15, 16 years, what changes have you seen in the customer experience? I mean, let's give me a picture of where we were in 2006. What was considered good customer practice back then?
That's a very good question, Adam. And I keep saying that I'm a witness of this evolution. Mm-hmm. And of course, it was totally different in terms of needs and expectations. First thing that comes to my mind, at that time, let's say the greatest fear of a regular spectator, fan, would be the traffic to get to the venue, no? How do I get there, etc. Nowadays, having this information available on our phones, so easy to access, the main fear is, will there be Wi-Fi? Will there be a charger for my phone? Because I depend on that. And this explains partially the evolution on one side. Yeah. So totally different needs, totally different expectations. Nowadays, we do have a commitment to provide a way higher experience, that's higher level of experience to the fans overall. You wouldn't expect in 2006 a website to have clear content. You would hope to have it. But nowadays, if you don't have a clear content, you are in trouble as an organization. Not only because the people will not have a good experience, but there's another game changer in between, which is a company that was founded in 2000, but it turned to be extremely popular, I think, after Torino 2007, 2008. That's the first time I've heard about TripAdvisor. Mm-hmm. That's a game changer in terms of experience. If we look at the consequences, positive, to the hotel and restaurant F&B industry, that I, having being also an entrepreneur in hospitality, I've seen the quality, the average quality going really higher, thanks to the fact that the guests, in this case, the fans, do have a voice, and the voice counts. It's way much stronger than before. And this changed the game. Mm-hmm. There's other aspects in this evolution, which are definitely the, if I may, I don't know if it's the correct word in English, the professionalization.
We can use it.
Sorry, definitely a Latinism, but you got the point. So the development of professional figures like me and others in different fields, dedicated or somehow impacting with the work on the fan experience, having that more and more in mind. And this is from the organizer perspective, is probably the biggest change I've seen. In previous, let's say in events until 2009, I wouldn't receive certain invitations to certain meetings. After that, my agenda got really way more busy, busier. Compared to previous events. And this is probably the consequence of what we just said, the change of the needs, the change of the expectations, and the importance of the voice. So I was representing that voice in those meetings. People do want to know about the spectator perspective. Now, the issue when you have to deal, when you have to work to defend and advocate spectator needs, basically, is the fact that everyone has been a spectator once in a life, at least. So everyone thinks they are an expert because they've been spectators, and this is one of the challenges of my work, let's say.
I've got to ask you there, Mark. Like you said, there you rep, you know, you are the voice of the spectator in these meetings, and you know you are there to advocate their needs. You know, what is your philosophy towards that? What do you strongly believe now is the need of for the spectator?
Amazing question. Not to repeat the first one, because philosophy is one of my passions, and it's not every day that I receive a philosophic question. And basically, my philosophy is put the fan at the center, put the fan at the center of the strategy since the very beginning, a fan-centric approach, which I call it spectatorship. To summarize a way wider concept that I'll try to clarify along our chat, but basically my philosophy toward the relation between clubs and fans is exactly considering the word you use, relation, is it's all about love. Mm-hmm. There's a relationship of love, which according to me, I'm not the owner of the truth, but it's quite an unbalanced relationship where the fans, by definition, but then we have to see all the fans' profiles where we have the most loyal and unconditional love fan and the fan that is interested in the results and watching the highlights. I mean, in between the two, there's a universe. And this is what the fans are about. That's why the word fandom is the universe of the fans. But back to your question, it's a love relationship that is unbalanced because there's one partner which loves unconditionally and the other partner that in the most politically correct way, I can say that is distracted. Is distracted by other clients, by other, but what they think are the, in some cases, the main interest for the of the fans, but without asking the fans. And in every relationship, if there's a lack of communication, if there's a lack of understanding, or if there is not even the will to ask the other, then it's first one of the first signs that the relationship is not working that well. Now, this unbalanced relationship, if I continue in this allegory, probably needs a couple's therapy. at this stage, there's something that needs to be introduced, a third party that can give some suggestion on how to reconstruct or balance again, make it more fair, this relation. And if we think again that clubs barely or very rarely know and barely know about who their fans are, so it seems that they're not only distracted, they do not take care. And if we look at the experience in the stadiums, then an average experience in football stadiums worldwide, without taking any example, let's take the average, it's pretty low if we compare that to any other experience in the entertainment industry. Because this is another point, according to me. It's one of the mistakes that sometimes the sports organizations at all levels do make. They do not understand that they are operating within the industry of entertainment. Sport is an entertainment option, which has huge advantages compared to other entertainment options, because that love is not gained, is by default. We have billions of fans that do not receive much in exchange, except the fact that they keep being as loyal and as passionate, as in love as the first day. So where I want to go with that, the clubs need to know their fans, their habits, their needs, their expectations, not getting distracted by other clients. Let's say it's a B broadcasters, for example. Those are B2B clients. The fans are B2C clients. It's two different directions that they should manage both in the proper way. The broadcasters, you can bet they're managed in the proper way, because they're seen as a source of income. I go beyond that, my philosophy, put the fan at the center and see the fan as the source of income, because that's the one that is paying the pay TV, the broadcasters, to broadcast. So at the end of the day, it goes back to the fans. The sponsors, the technical sponsor, they want to sell the shirts. Who's going to buy that shirt? The fans. And we want to sell the tickets at the stadium. Who's going to pay for that tickets? And air flight, accommodation, the F&B, the sandwich rather than the suite, the hospitality suite for the lucky or wealthy fans. I mean, it's all about the fans. It would be interesting now, and I get to the conclusion about this long answer, but I it's because of your amazing question. it's inspiring, really, Adam. But to wrap up, I think it will be... This relation now has been very platonic, very digital in modern words, and known or practically known physical. The physical touch point is the stadium. Now, if I can be provocative here, I don't know if in the audience there's someone that experienced a long a distance relationship and didn't see the partner for 1 year will not answer here, but ask yourself the question, would you, in case this happens, would you still be loyal to your partner after 1 year without a physical contact? This is the question that I think we or the clubs have to ask themselves, and they have to prepare for the next steps.
I agree completely, and of course here, you know, we are referring to the pandemic in particular, and the fact that supporters haven't been able to get in for such a long time all around the globe. You know, in your eyes, in your opinion, Marco, what do you feel the clubs need to do first and foremost to, shall we say, you know, to go back to this long distance relationship, to reduce the risk of temptation to stray away from the relationship?
I think most of the clubs that I do follow as a fan and as a professional, from both my perspective, my sides, my personalities, I think the clubs have done an amazing work on the digital engagement in this pandemic. Definitely it boosted in all sectors. The pandemic boosted digital innovation and the investment in the development of digital services. And this is an example. I think podcasts in general there's been a boom of podcasts. Definitely, I was never invited before the pandemic, and since the pandemic, I receive a few invitations. So this is a sign for me. And that digital engagement, the clubs have been working really hard. And to be fair, not only digital, also on the community engagement, there's some exceptional, very inspiring and impacting community engagement actions from many, many clubs. It is a legend among the AS Roma fans that the new owners, the Friedkin Group, basically they were negotiating before the pandemic, buying my team. I'm a fan of AS Roma. And they gave up at some point because, of course, the negotiation got harsh during the pandemic period. And then at some point, the CNN showcased community engagement action of AS Roma that was delivering food and other stuff to the oldest fans, and some of them being over 100 years old. Someone in the freaking group has seen this on CNN and said, okay, call the actual owner, I'm going to buy this club. The return of investment of an action, of a community engagement action, that could be a case study. If the story is true, I told you, it's a legend. But this is this is what the clubs really focused. Mm-hmm. Now, what I would have loved to see is the clubs understanding the sense of the issue. And this is, I'm not sure that has happened. What I mean is, closed doors, after the lockdown where everything stopped, it was decided to restart sports with closed doors or very reduced capacity. Especially the run after the protocols, the safety protocols, social distancing, etc., to me, totally necessary, of course. To me, it showed that it wasn't understood, the essence of the issue. It's not ensuring that someone can go to the stadium that would solve the issue. Because then you get who that someone is. Still, you will not recreate the atmosphere. And this is the essence of the issue. Not having stadiums full or partially full, not that every Sunday we have full stadiums all over the world, but not having that atmosphere was the issue. And I would have loved the clubs to understand, first of all, that probably they could have involved the fans in trying to find a solution. And I haven't seen that. Second, that they should invest in a digital experience that probably could substitute in this period the fans' atmosphere, work on something that would keep the atmosphere, and at the same time could be a legacy for later on. When you don't have that full stadium, then you can partially apply that whatever solution. Mm-hmm. Now, I've seen I've been following worldwide all the solutions provided, and probably at the beginning, the one that really caught my attention was the Danish club Aarhus. I don't know the exact pronunciation. I've even been
me
there.
Me either. My Danish isn't that good. I've gotta say.
But that was enlightening because they put those screens. I'm sure you've seen it. They put the screens with fans connected on Zoom and so on. That was for free. And then the NFL brought it to another level with the draw. The NFL draw. They had paid spectators on the screens in the TV studio. Then the NBA, and you see then. Since Aarhus, then we'll move to North America and we will not exit. Yeah. And again, it has to do with my philosophy, which I didn't invent. Probably if we go back in the past, we'll see the same at Disney when Walter Disney was actually developing the concept. He put the client in the middle. So the NBA Final Four, and who took it? What I think to the right level is the WWE. The wrestling, which has in its name the word entertainment, by the way. Back to the entertainment industry. They understood the essence. They took the arena, the basketball arena in Orlando, the Orlando Magic arena, and they transformed it for the wrestling mania. They put a few thousand screens, and they basically, every camera shot was studied to have the spectators on the background. And here you go. Someone understood that the spectators, that the fans are at the center. Even when the athletes are competing, you do not engage with a remote audience if you don't have a live audience, which is enthusiastic. That atmosphere is also impacting on the athletes and so on. I can continue forever. But basically, this is my vision. This is what I would have liked to see. Of course, the engagement, the digital engagement, I see it too much toward the transactional rather than the conversational side. Engaging means interacting. And if you don't have a reaction from the other side, except taking the credit card and using it, I mean, that's an action that will last if you provide a discount coupon, may last longer, but at some point it will end. If you involve through the conversation, through that maximization of the fan love, then you will definitely approach it in another way, and the clubs will definitely reach unexpected results. This is what I see. Now I get to the conclusion of your question again. What I would like to see after COVID is surprising those fans, surprise that love in this relationship. The minimum you would do if you wouldn't see your partner after 1 year, I think you would spend more money than buying flowers, but the minimum you would do, you would buy flowers. You would find a way to surprise your partner. So this is what I expect from the clubs, that they reward, first of all, those that have been loyal, and they will show it because they'll show up before gates opening. You have to reward them. And second, surprise them and the others that Sunday after Sunday will advocate your vision, your new vision, that you finally are taking care of them also on match day.
Well, thank you. Thanks for that. Giving us a lot of food for thought there. It's going to be really interesting to see how it develops. Do you see this also coming across at the national events, as you mentioned there, the tier one competitions, or is it something purely club focused?
It is, let's say, from our perspective, FIFA tournaments, We are so far lucky that we didn't have an upcoming Tier 1 event, except the Club World Cup, which was postponed and it's being redefined, and it will happen now in Doha next week, but in the next weeks. But Men's World Cup is still 1.5 year from now, and we somehow have time to see to see the development. Of course, but this is my personal opinion. Of course, I'm not speaking on behalf of FIFA in this context. Of course, there is an overall need of exploring a digital experience that can be not only in case of emergency, used in case of emergency, but also having another perspective. I think there's good activation. I've seen the partnership between NFL and Nickelodeon with the augmented reality created by the SpongeBob, taken from the SpongeBob to engage with kids. I mean, these kind of solutions needs to be further developed, there needs to be further research on that, because that's definitely a direction that the world took and it's not going back.
I see. We really want to see the world where the fan is put as the key cornerstone of sport going forward. Marco, I've got to say a really big thank you for today. It's been great listening to your thoughts and your expertise in this area that the pandemic has really brought to the forefront of so many people's thinkings and consciousness. For people who want to follow you more, and would like to, engage in the conversation a little bit more with you, is there anywhere on social media that they can connect with you?
Of course. The one I'm pretty active is LinkedIn. So feel free to look for Marco Sansoni and you'll find me there. I'm launching my professional Instagram profile, which is Marco Sansoni official. There's plenty of Marco Sansoni around the world, so I had to pick one. And that's where I will begin very soon posting about these concepts and others that I'm developing in these days, thanks to various inspirational chats like this one.
Oh, thank you for that. Thank you for that. Well, that's it, everyone, for today. To say, hopefully, people listening at home, you're as inspired as I am by the way the sport is developing. And just again, big thank you to Marco for his words today. Till next time, everyone. I'm Adam at Ucrafoc24. You can follow me across the social medias or with Adam Page myself on LinkedIn. Till next time, stay safe and take care for now.